Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. We're coming back after replaying Mark Lifton's segment on franchise relationships last Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, and we hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. And I'm trying to figure out if everybody did, because it really blew me away at the amount of people that listened to a replay over the Thanksgiving holiday. But that's really a good sign for Franchise Today. And I'm really looking forward to some very exciting times for Franchise Today in 2015. First, as I've said before, we're celebrating our sixth year on the air. And what better way to kick it off than with our new co-host for the new year, Stan Friedman from FRM Solutions. Also, Franchise Today is expanding its programming in 2015 to include a consumer-focused show, Understanding Franchising, and along with it, another show called The Franchisor Spotlight that will focus on emerging brands and their trek into franchising. It should be some really good information to look back upon a couple of years from now as we look at some of these emerging brands and see where we are back at that point. You know, of course, Franchise Today will remain focused on best practices and, of course, really compelling topics on franchising. And a new platform is being explored, and negotiations are underway with the goal of starting the new year on that platform. So we're really looking forward to that. As you know, our objective with our podcast is really to continue to build everything around Franchise Today, and of course being produced by Franchise Foundry and all that we're doing, to really be a content powerhouse. You know, to that end, Accelerated Digital Strategies has been formed within the Franchise Foundry family, and via content development and management, our primary focus is integrated communications and education. And of course, this program is just the cornerstone of our own digital strategy and that for our current and future franchisor clients. So it's really an exciting time for us at Franchise Today and, of course, throughout the entire Franchise Foundry Services Group. And today I'll be joined by Tom Epstein, the CEO and founder of Franchise Payments Network, along with Lee Plave, partner at the law firm with Zing Plave Cook. But before I introduce them and today's topic of exploring the data minefield in franchising, I want to point out this month's issue of Franchising World. Actually, it's the November issue of Franchising World. I just got to it yesterday. But in it, there's a pretty interesting opening column by IFA President and CEO Steve Caldera, helping IFA members stay cyber safe. And it's a pretty lengthy column, and I'll only focus on a couple of things. And then, of course, this will lead into our conversation today. Steve says, you know, we're working with like-minded business organizations in Washington to help develop sound policies and regulations that secure commerce for customers, but at the same time, do not unfairly put the burden squarely on the back of franchise business owners who often at the mercy of credit and financial institutions with the regard of the types of technologies used at the point of purchase and the security around them. He goes on to say, we're focusing on giving IFA members the information they need to understand both the challenges and opportunities that various types of technology offer. We're putting the final programming touches for the ever-popular technology summit conducted during the 2015 IFA Annual Convention in Las Vegas, which will address how to use data in marketing decisions while at the same time protecting customers. And then, of course, there's Frantech, which will definitely address some of these issues, and that's been scheduled for October in Dallas. He also goes on to say that the newest initiative is a partnership we formed with the National Cybersecurity Alliance to create greater awareness and empower companies to keep their sensitive information safe and secure online. And through educational development and effort and events, IFA and NCSA will work toward a collective goal to educate business owners about the basic steps they can take to become more cyber secure. And with that in mind, you know, I'd like to introduce today's guest. Lee Plave has extensive experience counseling, you know, distributors and franchisors, including drafting and negotiating franchise agreements for complex international and domestic transactions. He also counsels clients on the application of technology to franchise and distribution systems. Tom Epstein is the founder and CEO of Franchise Payment Networks, an organization that helps franchises process credit cards as well as with a very robust loyalty program. Both are members, along with myself, on the International Franchise Association's Marketing and Technology Committee. But these two guys, when it comes to data, are really, in my mind, some of the leaders. Tom, Lee, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
And, of course, Lee, this is a return to Franchise Today. I think you've been on several times already, and especially in some of our previous franchise legal series, which, of course, we will be doing our fifth annual franchise legal series in the spring, and I hope you can join us again at that time, Lee.
Be a pleasure, and thank you for having me back.
You know, this type of topic, you know, exploring the data minefield in franchising, is definitely that, you know, focus every day in the news, you know, obviously not just franchising, but with, you know, small businesses and big businesses everywhere. With data breaches more than doubling since 2009 to more than 25,000 incidents in 2013 alone, and with 467 of those breaches occurring in the real retail sector, you know, franchises have also been affected as well. Lee, why don't we lead off with you? I know you've provided me with a bunch of information, and this is almost one of those topics where it's almost hard to even figure out where we need to start. And as I've said, with all this information, you know, we need a bigger boat. So why don't I just I know you've been a big proponent of things that franchising needs to do. I know you've been in communications with the IFA. Why don't you give us an overview of where we are with these data breaches and maybe even give us some of your opinion as to potentially where it may be headed?
I'm happy to do so. Thank you. And thanks again for having me. I think a couple of things come to mind. That Tom and I have worked together on a couple of task forces on behalf of the Franchise Association. And what we have seen is that there is a growing recognition on the part of retailers that there is a problem that absolutely has to be tackled in a professional way. And the challenge for franchise companies is that it's tough for all retailers. I mean, let's face it, it's tough for Target. Target is an integrated, fully operational company with tremendous capability that just, you know, it didn't work right for them. The challenge is that much harder for franchise companies where there are, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of players, and you need to coordinate a lot of people who are moving in, you know, in different directions simultaneously. So the challenge is not an insubstantial. That's number one. Number two, the outcome is a scary one. If we were all franchisees of the same system, and it turned out that there was a data breach, it tends to potentially limit the number of visits our clients, our customers are going to make to us, because, you know, if they can choose our company or they can choose a competing company, why, they may just choose the competitor if that name isn't associated with a data breach. Let's say that they're planning to use a credit card to buy their products that day. So the second part of it is that it has a direct impact on sales. You need to look no further, really, than Target to know that. The third one is that just because it's happening to everyone doesn't mean that it's less consequential when it happens to you, both in business terms, as I just outlined, and candidly in legal terms. So there's no way of getting around this issue. And last but not least, from a franchising standpoint, protecting franchising in general, we want to make sure that not just individual businesses are protected, but that the model of franchising is protected, and that nobody decides they're going to attack franchising simply because franchisor sets a data policy, and therefore somebody gets the bright idea that franchisors are inherently responsible for everything that takes place in the system, including a data breach at a local franchise unit, which they really have no control over. So it's a really multifaceted issue, and it candidly is one that requires absolute professionalism, competence, and dedication to getting it right at every step of the way by all the players.
Sure. Tom, some of your thoughts?
You know, I agree with Lee with a lot of the points that he just made. What I always try to bring into the conversation is that there are several entities that are really kind of putting all the regulations, if you will, around PCI compliance, payment card industry compliance, and that's really what we're talking about here, protecting cardholder data. You have the PCI Security Council. You have another association, much like the IFA, the ETA, the Electronic Transactions Association, who both of those two organizations work together to try to put together these rules and regulations around how do you protect the cardholder data. And to kind of echo Lee's thoughts, if your target, it's a little bit easier to follow those regulations because you have a group of people at corporate headquarters that are putting policies in place that meet those requirements, and you send out the memo and it goes down to the store managers and the people in the stores are supposed to execute on those. And we all know that, you know, sometimes things don't get executed the way that they should in a corporate environment. And we also know that sometimes there's things that can happen that aren't anticipated. In the case of Target, they came in through the HIVAC system, and nobody really anticipated that. You would have thought it would be a pure POS play to get into the system. But you have these things. But in the franchise environment, it's a lot more difficult because you as a franchisor might be saying, look, we really find this to be, you know, an important aspect of our business, and we want our franchisees to be safe, and you publish guidelines around what you need to do at the point of sale with your internet routers and all the access points that you might have into your network. But at the end of the day, it's about execution at the franchisee level in order to make your brand safe. And you've got some franchisees who are going to do everything that you ask them to do, and you've got some that aren't just frankly going to be paying attention to it. And so how do you manage those folks at that level that aren't paying attention and aren't doing everything you want them to do? I can imagine, you know, as a franchisor, you have enough trouble just making sure that, you know, the product that's going out the door, sometimes you want to make sure that that's consistent. Well, these things need to be consistent as well. And so it's educating your field guys and girls to be going in and looking at, you know, what their compliances are being done at the store level. One of the big things that we see, because we're intimately involved in the point of sale, is, you know, a lot of franchisors, they'll go to their point of sale vendor and say, hey, you know, is your point of sale PCI compliant? And most of them are. You know, probably 99% of the point of sale guys out there, they're running off of compliant, PCI compliant point of sale systems. But what happens is every time there's a major breach or a major vulnerability that's discovered, the point of sale guys have to go back and re-release new software versions and that sort of thing in order to patch those breaches,
mm-hmm.
or patch those vulnerabilities, I should say. And what happens is franchisees sometimes don't often download the new version of the point of sale software, because they think, well, the old one's working. Why do I need to spend $200-$300 or whatever it is, you know, that the point of sale guy is charging to update it? Well, if you don't update it, now you're vulnerable. And then, you know, this past year in 2014, we saw where a lot of point of sale systems work off of, you know, Windows operating systems, where you had XP no longer being supported. So mm-hmm. The new security patches that were coming out stopped coming out for XP in April, I believe it was. Well, a lot of franchisees out there never updated to the newer version of the operating system, so they're not getting the Windows security patch updates. Had a conversation just as recent as 2 weeks ago with a very large franchisor who started failing their scans because a new security update came out from Windows. And we learned that a lot of their franchisees never updated from XP to a newer version. And that's what was causing that to happen. So it's you need to know what you need to do, but it's also execution on it. And how do you as a franchisor get those franchisees to do what it is they need to do? So it's monitoring, it's compliance, it's education, it's all of those things, which makes it a little bit more complicated, or I should say a lot more complicated in the franchise space than it is if you're in a corporate-owned environment.
Right. I mean, just, you know, it's scary to think about franchisees, you know, having to update and following through on it, because I know from my days back in the field and operations with various franchise companies, there would typically be a pile of envelopes on a desk or on the top of a file cabinet, and I'd ask, what are those? And they said, oh, well, those are the updates to the operation manual. And that's all they had to do was open it, and they were already three-hole punched and inserted them. And that was relatively easy. So I could just imagine, you know, following up on going through with some of these updates would be a problem. You know, we know there's been, you know, a lot of issues out there. We've heard about what's going on with Home Depot. We've heard what's going on with Dairy Queen and, of course, you know, Target. I know today on a Google alert on the phrase data breach, I got a slew of Google alerts about Target. You know, Target fails to end bank lawsuits over data breach. Target Corp must face banks' claims over 13 data breaches. Target must face bank suits over customer data breach. Target loses bid to KO Bank's data breach litigation. I mean, this is big-time stuff. But an interesting article that came out in the Dallas Business Journal about Dairy Queen and when they confirmed their potential data breach, and it said, you know, Dairy Queen may have been hit with a data breach that could put customers at risk of credit card fraud, the ice cream and fast food chain had said. The customer data at a limited store, number of stores may be at risk. They went on to say that they disclosed the potential data breach after Krebs on Security blogger Brian Krebs reported a flurry of fraudulent credit card activity tied to a possible data breach at Dairy Queen stores in the Midwest and South. And this is where it kind of got interesting. The blogger went on, he was the first to report the massive data breach at Target Corp. When he wrote that a fraud prevention specialist at a Midwestern credit union said that more than 50 customers who recently made purchase at a Dairy Queen reported credit card fraud. He said Dairy Queen had said that the potential data breach was connected to the back-off point-of-sale malware that hit Target last year. But, of course, he didn't understand at that point how widespread the breach could be. And here's the alarming thing that Dean Peters, the Dairy Queen spokesman, said, that franchisees who operate most of Dairy Queen's 6,300 stores are not required to report fraud to the headquarters.
Yeah.
So, you know, you know, thinking about this, you know, they went on to say Evan Fronson, president of information security management company FR Secure in Waconia, said they're going to suffer some damage, even if it's not true, simply because they had no franchisee fraud reporting policy. And I know, Lee, we talk a lot about, you know, technology policies, social media policies and guidelines for franchisees. How many franchise organizations, rhetorical question, I guess, how many franchise organizations out there don't have a policy of reporting of fraud?
Well, I don't want to talk about any one company, but I will say this. The phenomenon of worrying considerably about data is one of relatively recent origin. Many of us have included some data clauses for quite some time in our contract. going back almost a full decade at least. But the truth of it is there are contracts that are 10, 15, 20 years in duration that are out there, including some franchisors whose method of renewal is simply to say your contract is renewed without replacing the contract and even without getting released. And that's a separate subject altogether. But what it means is that the legacy agreements and the legacy policies may still be in effect. This is one on which, however, I believe virtually any franchisor can legitimately and appropriately issue a policy statement that says, this is our data policy, and then lay out a statement as to what it expects. I don't think you need to necessarily rely upon the contract as having a hook for that. I think it's something that every franchisor ought to take seriously and consider how to approach this with their company's particular circumstances in mind. I'll give you an example. It's different for a healthcare company than it is for a fast food company. It's different for a company that is in the business of collecting data and using it to customer get somewhere, like a tax prep company, than it is for a company that's in other conventional types of retailing. So everyone has to contemplate it in its own context. But this is one where every franchisee and every franchisor operated business location, every company owned and franchise unit, is a point of vulnerability. And you're subject to the vicissitudes of the weakest common link. So you could have 98% of the people doing it well, and 2% screwing it up, and that 2% is going to really make a significant difference to the rest of everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, according to, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, it's the Ponemon, P-O-N-E-M-O-N Institute, as reported by Forbes, the average total organizational cost for a data breach in the United States in 2014 is $5.85 million. Lee, from a legal perspective, and I know that there's, you know, more and more insurance offerings covering, you know, data breach. But, you know, the thing that kind of weighs in my mind when I think of, you know, any type of legal situation is negligence. So certainly it makes sense, even with legacy agreements, if a franchisor is proactive from the standpoint of educating their franchisees and updating their operations manual, putting out, you know, regular communications and documentations, making them aware and to be able to do all that they can to secure data. I mean, from a negligence standpoint, doesn't it make sense at least to be doing that?
Well, I whatever you call it, it makes sense to get the franchisor out there leading the charge, because candidly, there's no other party who can do so in a franchise system. You can have great franchisees. You can have great franchisees that handle it well. But again, since it's a least common denominator kind of a thing, you've really got to have somebody take charge of this and run with it. And that in virtually every system has to be the franchisor. To me, the biggest vulnerability here is brand liability, which is brand exposure, brand damage, the business damage that we all fear of having our company, our client's brand name, our company's brand names dragged through the front pages of the paper by virtue of, you know, a very small, in relation to the system, data breach that more or less throws everybody into the same mix. But from a legal perspective, the vulnerabilities are not insubstantial. And so I agree wholeheartedly that the companies ought to take the bull by the horns, issue a data policy, say this is the standard, and then enforce it. Train to it and then enforce it. And the vulnerabilities people have are not insubstantial. So, for example, you have exposure to the consumers whose data may be compromised. You have exposure among the franchisees, conceivably with respect to their relationship to the franchisor, whether you call it negligence or not, it may not be negligence at all, but whatever the standard is, there is that possibility. If it's a public company, there may be shareholder liability. In some states, PCI liability is baked into the law, and as Tom alludes to, more importantly, you may have the PCI folks which is to say Visa, MasterCard, the people who run your merchant account, breathing down your neck looking for fines if you make a mistake in this area. So there is substantial liability both at the business and legal level.
Absolutely. We're live on Franchise Today, and we're talking about the data minefield in franchising, and I'm joined by my guest, Tom Epstein, the CEO and founder of Franchise Payments Network, and Lee Plave, partner at the law firm Plave Cook. You know, as we know, and this goes back in August when this was reported, 51 franchise UPS stores were hacked. They talked about a data breach. And in the statement, UPS store said that 51 of its franchise locations across the country were victims of a malware attack. Customers at 51 locations between January 20th and August 11th may have had their personal data exposed. Most of the attacks occurred after March 26th. And it said the information that may have been hacked was names, postal addresses, email addresses, and payment card information. You know, but, you know, Tom, a lot of people think that it's the point of entry of the credit card into the processing system where they actually swipe their card. That's, you know, a lot of people think that's where the point of the attack occurs. Can you care to elaborate a little bit about, you know, the equipment being used today and where these attacks are actually occurring?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the majority of the breaches that are taking place are not happening at that point where you're swiping the card.
Right.
And I think that's really where the disconnect is, you know, especially in franchise, where franchise chains, obviously, I mean, I think a lot of franchise chains run on a limited budget. They don't have a huge IT department in their corporate office. And they lean a lot on their vendors to give them advice on, you know, what's the right thing to do. And if a franchisor were to ask their point-of-sale provider, are we PCI compliant, every point-of-sale provider that they're probably using is going to say, yeah, sure you are. And you know what? The point-of-sale probably is. What I like to do is kind of look at PCI, especially in the franchise environment, as a chain. And if any one piece of that chain is not secure or compliant, you're in trouble. So you have to look at it from all the different touch points that that data can hit. So you know, who's doing the credit card processing for you at the very high level? It's you know probably one of two or three or four major platforms that are out there. And they're all doing everything that they need to do. It's not to say that they could never be hacked. We're waiting. I'm sure it's going to happen to one of them, but they're doing everything that they're supposed to be doing. How does it get there? Well, the data is flowing through the internet, right? So it's probably going through some sort of payment gateway. Are you running the right version of that payment gateway? Is it 100% compliant? The data is running through a router. This is where we see most of the problems right now, is through the router. All the stuff, all the activity that's going on in a retail restaurant environment is running through the router. It's the hub. Where we see a lot of problems when we're doing network scans is security cameras. What's really cool right now is the ability to put a camera in a restaurant or a retail, and from a remote location, you're sitting at home, you can watch what's going on behind the register or in the kitchen or whatever. And a lot of franchise owners like to do this. Well, think about that. So how are you going to get that feed from that camera? It's going through the internet, through a router. You have to have an open port for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So is that port properly firewalled? Are you running it on a separate network? There are a lot of coffee shops and, you know, restaurants of that nature that are giving Wi-Fi access to customers as they come in. Is that activity firewalled or whatever? Could you have a hacker just sitting in your restaurant enjoying a cup of coffee that has direct access to your point of sale through your system? So we're seeing a lot of those types of things happen. What's happening at the point of sale? Obviously, are you running the right version of your point of sale software? Did you update that when the point of sale vendor asked you to do it? Is the hardware? You're probably running off of some sort of Windows-based hardware. Did you update to the latest version of Windows? what are your employees doing when they get a card? Are they swiping it in the terminal? Does it not swipe? So do they have to key it in? Are they writing that number down? How are they handling that? Are they taking an imprint of the card? What are they doing with that data if it doesn't swipe? I think a lot of people don't look at that. And that's a huge issue around service brands. So if you've got service crews out in people's homes doing carpet cleaning or handyman services or that kind of thing, what's happening with that credit card number? How vulnerable is that number at that point? That's still a point of sale where they're taking the transaction. So we look at that for a chain as well and say, you know, where along that chain do you have vulnerabilities? And is everybody, every location, as Lee said, if you only have 1 or 2% of your franchisees not doing what they're supposed to be doing, that's part of that chain too. So there's a weak point in that chain. So are your franchisees doing that and watching all of those points within the chain? The other thing that, you know, we talked about what happened with, you know, one franchise chain that, you know, the public relations person reported, you know, to the news that they didn't, you know, they didn't have a policy for, you know, their franchisees to report to the corporate, which was mind-boggling to me. Mm-hmm. Within 30 days of that same incident, a fairly large sandwich chain, the same thing happened to them, same sort of scenario, and they responded, I would say, freaky fast, if it gives you a hint of who it was, but they responded very well to that. They had the policies in place to notify corporate, to notify the customers, and they got ahead of the situation and shut down the vulnerabilities before it could spread too much further. So, you know, to the earlier point of franchisors taking the lead on this and understanding the need to develop an internal data security policy, I agree with Lee. You can't, you know, just force it into an FDD, or probably a lot of these guys are still on the UFOCs from 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But you can pull it in your ops manual. You can make it a policy, I think, and make sure that your franchisees are doing what they need to do. And then, again, I kind of stress, train your field ops guys that are going in and checking compliance on cleanliness and, you know, branding and everything that you're doing at the franchisee level. Add this to that compliance check sheet. Make sure that they're doing those sort of things to make sure that your brand is safe as well.
That's an excellent suggestion, you know, getting it out to the field's ops people. Well, we know the holiday season is upon us, and I know a lot of the data protection experts out there say they're different than any other season because other times during the year, retailers, you know, have time to breathe, you know, have time to monitor and update their system. But, of course, the volume of transactions, you know, during the holiday season makes it hard to monitor the systems as closely. So both of your points are well taken that, you know, the franchisees need to have policies in place and actually execute on when they need to update systems. Tom, you know, we see this new technologies that are coming out, you know, a wallet type of technology from a mobile standpoint. Are they more secure than other payment net methods?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty exciting time. I normally, when I'm in front of a group of people and we're talking about payment processing, and I prefer to talk about loyalty because that's cool and everything, but payment processing is kind of becoming sexy too with Apple Pay coming out and, you know, a resurgence of Google Wallet and currency. You know, what is being pushed right now by all the card brands is the EMV, which is, you know, the standard that's in Europe and the rest of the world, where you've got a chip on a card and you would either, you know, either sign a receipt or use a PIN number. But I think Apple Pay doing the NFC is taking it a step further because the card number is never present in the environment. So if you're loading, you know, your card numbers into these wallets, the technology for the application is it's creating a token, if you will, that is being transferred from your phone to the point of sale and onto the credit card processor, and that card number doesn't even exist in the point of sale environment. So mm-hmm. what could be safer than that? If somebody were to hack in and get the token, there's nothing they could do with it. It's a one-time use token. If they could figure out how to decrypt it, which is highly unlikely, there's nothing they could do with it. So it is pretty exciting to see the new technology that's going on right now. So you're going to see, I think, over the next probably 4 to 5 years, better and better technology that's going to be taking place at the point of sale for the face-to-face transactions. It's going to begin to start limiting some of these hacks that are happening at the point of sale.
Mm-hmm.
But the bad guys, they understand this, and you know they're starting to shift more and more. I think you'll start seeing more and more online hacking into systems where it's not face-to-face transactions, where you don't have as good a security procedures in place.
Well, what a great... Go ahead, Lee.
Well, I would just amplify Tom's comment, because if you consider that most of the current vulnerability is not, for most of our companies, but not exclusively, is not really the point of sale device, although that is an issue. The vulnerability is increasingly internally within the system. The very large hacks that have taken place in the last year, the multi-unit hacks, are not necessarily point of sale hacks. They're system hacks.
Right.
And those are the ones that are exposing the country, the businesses, everyone, to enormous vulnerability. You know, a couple of years ago when he was the director of the CIA, Leon Panetta made a comment to the effect that we were effectively at cyber war. A year ago, the United States indicted 5 officers of the People's Liberation Army, not for spying and espionage, but rather for commercial hacking against several companies in the Pittsburgh area. The director of the NSA was quoted in the last week as saying, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when there'll be a cataclysmic cyber attack in the United States. And what it suggests is several things. One, we are all on the front line. We don't just send our soldiers, our men and women, into battle. We are all now, as businesses, on the front line. Two, the hacks that took place last year, the Home Depot, the Target, the one this week involving Sony and the FBI's warning of vulnerability, potentially came from North Korea and China, or just North Korea. It's not clear yet. All of that suggests that systems have to be much better protected. Part of that is people using common sense. And, you know, maybe with today being early in the Christmas shopping season, it's a good day to emphasize, be careful what you do with the emails you get. Those are just rife with all kinds of potential malware and worms. If you see an email that says sale at a store's name, you can click on a link, and you might or might not get to the site, but you can also just go and navigate your browser to that site, and you'll get the same benefits of having done so. And the difference is, in the first instance, when you click on the link, you're exposing yourself and your system to a potential cataclysmic attack. In the second instance, you might just get a bargain.
You know, when you talk about, you know, systems, you know, from this article in the Chronicle, it said, you know, recently 1 million customer records were exposed in the J.P. Morgan Chase breach, and 56 million credit and debt card records were compromised when Home Depot system was hacked. And, you know, in this month's or November's issue of Franchising World, Robert Crisanti of the IFA said, it's a normal day at your business, and your employees are working hard to meet your customers' needs. Suddenly, a warning appears on your computer screen. It's a ticking clock next to a threat that all of your data will be destroyed unless you pay $500 within the next 40 hours. If you give in, you're encouraging future attacks. If you don't, your business could lose critical information and customer trust. And he goes on to say, and I think this is a very strong point, and I think you both alluded to this earlier, Unfortunately, the businesses most vulnerable to cybercrime are often the least equipped to deal with the repercussions. Electronic criminals are drawn to small businesses because they often lack the experience. As you said, Tom, they don't have the resources for an IT department, experience, or staff to defend themselves from digital infiltration. Once in, these criminals can steal customer personal and payment information, disrupt normal business operations, and even hold company data hostage. Would any of you like to comment on that?
That's just scary stuff, Paul.
It is.
That's my only comment there.
It is scary as hell. I'd have to say it actually would frighten many an individual considering about starting their own business. I mean, this is just another potential liability and issue they have to face. I mean, it's definitely a time when franchisors and our, you know, International Franchise Association really need to, I can't even use a number, double up, triple up, significantly increase their attention to this matter. This is not something going away, as you said, Lee.
No. And you know, anybody who knows me knows that I've been preaching PCI compliance around franchise for many, many years. I've been writing articles about this, you know, in all the franchise publications going way, way, way back. And I do think if there's any good news here, it's that franchisors are starting to pay attention. I can remember not even 4 years ago, I was sitting in the office of a very large franchisor trying to have a discussion with these guys around PCI, and they basically told me, don't tell me anymore. I don't want to know anymore. If you tell me, then I have to know it, and I have to do something about it. Right now, we look at it as the franchisee's responsibility, and I'm hearing that a lot less lately, where the franchisors are now saying, yep, we understand it. We understand what we need to do. We need help. We don't really have our arms around it 100% yet, but we do understand it, and we know that, you know, what, you know, how important it is, and we've got to get this done. I'm seeing more and more franchisors that are taking that proactive approach, and you know, at the end of the day, they realize they're telling franchisees or giving them a guideline as to how to do business. You know, we want you to sell these sandwiches made this way, or we want you to perform this service this way, and we want you to use this type of point of sale system when it comes to paying for it. And we want you to have these other systems connected to your router. It doesn't take a really good, you know, IT person or a really smart attorney to realize that all these things are interrelated, and if something should happen there, the franchisor is kind of directed how that should go.
Right.
So they need to take it a step further and help the franchisee fill those gaps.
Right. And certainly franchisors today, if they're making the right investments in technology, certainly can use it as a benefit for a candidate to choose their brand over another brand. I didn't want to cast this gray cloud over, you know, people buying a business, not buying a business because of it. You know, certainly that's, you know, part of our livelihood here. you know, Lee, but go ahead.
Well, I would just to follow up on what you just said, and as well as what Tom said, what it suggests is another problem that's out there, and that's this. You could look at this as an individual problem, and as Tom described, and I've heard from other people, it's not my problem as the franchisor, it's the franchisee's problem, because they're the ones who process the credit cards. And in some respect, that's true, but it only goes so far. The Federal Trade Commission is looking very actively into this area. They've already brought a claim against the Wyndham Company. It's not directly on the question of whether or not Wyndham as a franchisor is responsible. It involves franchising, and the case has got more nuances. But it would not take a whole lot to imagine that some franchisor somewhere is going to be charged with responsibility for the data practices within its network for one or another reason. There's an adage in the law that goes roughly like this: bad facts make bad law. Somebody mm-hmm. will do this. Somebody will find that they are the ones who are the poster children for how not to do it. And in that system, the franchisor will potentially face liability. And while they may be able to defeat the liability, it'll come at a significant cost that would probably be greater than the cost of remediating it in the first place.
So that brings up a segue into, you know, what's going on in franchising today with respect to the National Labor Relations Board opinion that with McDonald's, with respect to McDonald's being a co-employer of employees yeah. at franchise locations. And we're going to see, and of course, as you and I discussed, you know, some of the opinion of lawmakers up in Seattle with their minimum wage laws and treating franchise businesses differently. So, you know, all of this kind of ties together, but it seems like as much as those two instances have large ramifications from a data standpoint, you know, it has massive potential consequences.
It does, and the NLRB thing is a whole separate issue. It's, you know, it's the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board. He so far has issued a two-paragraph press statement, and we don't know where he's going to go. We don't know the facts on which he's basing this whole thing. We have some strong hints that it's not going to be favorable to at least to the one player, to McDonald's, and potentially to franchising on a broader sense. But we don't know enough yet to draw more conclusions. So I hope we can keep our powder dry for the moment on that until we see the direction he's going and then consider how to approach it from there. But, yeah, it is harder and harder for franchisors to assert the position that they're not responsible for what takes place at the franchisee level, which I think is really where all of this is headed. And part of it is because the legal and business landscape is changing. And part of it is because, quite honestly, the integration the technology creates between the franchisor, the franchisee, and even among the franchisees is that much greater. So apparently seamless technology and integration comes opportunity, but also vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's, as we've all three of us have discussed, you know, it's educating, you know, people, what appear to be smart people and well-educated people, you know, about franchising. And, of course, anybody around franchising knows of the efforts that I've put in and Tom has put in with respect to American Express and Small Business Saturday and minimizing the participation for franchises to participate. It really still blows me away. And again, the lawmakers up in Seattle, I think, have some of the same mindset. They just don't have the full understanding of what the franchise model is about. And obviously, it's just so important for each of us in franchising to be educating as many people as we can, as often as we can, to, you know, the business model, the realities of it, all the way down to the, you know, the single unit, single ownership, mom or pop type of operation that very much rivals or even mirrors, you know, some of the mom and pop businesses on Main Street USA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. In my space, you know, dealing with payment processing, I'm dealing with, you know, POS providers, I'm dealing with the payment card guys, I'm dealing with data security, I'm dealing with loyalty vendors. And it's always a discussion around educating them as to what franchising really is all about. And, you know, the consistency that a franchise chain wants to portray that, you know, if you go into a McDonald's in Maryland, you're going to get the same hamburger you get in California. It's got to be the same consistency in service from a vendor perspective and a systematic perspective and keeping everybody on the same programs and networks so that you can monitor this stuff and that you can keep in front of it. It's a challenge. And, you know, teaching them how they do that. And then teaching guys that are making the rules around PCI compliance. You know, one of the big things I'm involved with right now is working with the PCI Council and the Electronic Transactions Association and educating them on, you know, they do a good job of putting out standards that merchants need to follow. But I don't think they understand the dynamics of the franchise environment, and I'm working with them to educate them and to bring that conversation into the IFA and having these organizations all work together to, you know, put a franchise spin on it so that when they're putting something out that advises merchants what they need to do, let's put a franchise document together that, you know, that goes with it that says if you're a franchisee, these are the things that you want to do. Lee and I worked on something for the IFA that we published at last year's IFA convention that is kind of a roadmap for franchisees and franchisors around PCI compliance and what they need to do. And I believe it is still available on the IFA site. I don't have that link available to me right now, but if anybody's listening and wants to email either Lee or me or Paul, I'm sure we can get that to you. But it's a great document that at least gives you a roadmap of what you need to be looking at.
Great. Yeah, we're on Franchise today. We're live with Lee Plave and Tom Epstein as we're wrapping up on the data minefield in franchising. Tom, real quick, high level, what are some of the things that franchisors and franchisees can do to help protect themselves, and especially during this busy holiday season?
Well, right now it's being vigilant. Some of the things that, again, that I see from my perspective, it's you're not changing the passwords on you know, your routers on a regular basis. They need to be changed at a minimum every 90 days. You don't have the firewalls between your point-of-sale system and your security cameras or Wi-Fi, that sort of thing. It's watching your employees and teaching them the right way to handle the cards at the point-of-sale and making sure that they're doing the right thing. Making sure that your software is all up to date. If you're on XP, get it upgraded. If you're using an older version of a point-of-sale system, make sure you get that installed as soon as possible and run on the newer version. It's just simple things, but again, they just need to be executed on. And if you can do that, you know, at 100% of your locations, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Good. Lee, anything you'd like to add on that?
I think Tom's got a fantastic approach to it at the unit and at the system level. I would simply add that the people who work in the franchisors' offices, as well as the franchisees, need to be mindful of the assault that's taking place through malware that we all get through our computers. And if nothing else, be vigilant in the emails that you open and the links you click on, as well as the documents attached to them. That is... Among the other reasons, that is the way in which we're getting more of our attacks these days than any place else, and it's exactly where you've got to be the most careful.
You know, Lee brings up a really good point with that. We do, and we have seen recently, where some people are running, and it's really a nice advance in the point-of-sale industry, is you're able to run cloud-based point-of-sale technology. So you don't have, you know, the big, bulky, expensive boxes locally in the restaurant. You're running them off of iPads or Android tablets or whatever. But we're finding that that also opens up an opportunity more than it used to, where people would use the same tablet for email or surfing the web to, you know, do different things about their business. And you really need to firewall that. Don't use the same tablet that you would use, because that is where the viruses are coming into your network. A lot of times it's through emails, through going to a site that maybe is not as secure as it should be, or is not, you know, not a legitimate website or whatever. So you're downloading these Trojan-type viruses that are tracking everything that you're doing on that device. So as you said, Paul, you know, technology is great and it helps things, but it also gives you an opportunity for you know, bad things to happen as well. So you have to kind of use common sense and say, look, you still need to firewall yourself, if you will, and keep that point-of-sale device, whatever it is, if it's a tablet even, just for the point-of-sale. It's tempting to use it for other things.
Sure.
So you really should not.
Yeah, and that's something very simple to prevent. So I appreciate both of you being here today. I know you have very busy schedules. My guests today were Tom Epstein, CEO and founder of Franchise Payments Network, and Lee Plave, partner at Plave Cook, the law firm with Zing. I love that. And I saw the vodka Zing. That'll be interesting for Christmas presents. I like. Very good. Well, again, I appreciate you guys being here. Tom, I appreciate you helping me with our efforts with American Express and Small Business Saturday, and hopefully we continue to gain traction on that front. Wishing you both and your families a great holiday season, and most of all, be safe.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. And gentlemen, congratulations to the both of you. I think you've both made enormous efforts on behalf of franchising in general, and I, for one, on behalf of many, applaud what you both have done. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Next week, I'll be joined by from Kuwait with Dr. John Hayes, and we'll be discussing a whole host of things about franchising. And we got some exciting shows, you know, in store for you in 2015. Let's see. Next week is John Hayes, and then we wrap up the year with Rocco Fiorentino from the CEO at Benetrends, and we'll be talking about, you know, various franchise finance options. Next year we'll have various series, one that I mentioned earlier, our fifth annual franchise legal series, which will be 8 to 10 weeks of a lot of things about legal and franchising, and more than you probably could imagine. But we're real excited when people say they use some of that content for internal training, and I think that's very important. We'll also have various series on franchise finance and operations and a host of different things, and social media. So we're looking for a banner year. So until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.